Hello and welcome to Kitchen Curiosity. I'm your host, Radford Chancellor. On this episode, we're currently live on stage at the FEA Food Service Equipment Association conference in the Midlands. And I'm going to be joined by a number of guests, including the current chairperson of the FEA, the incoming chairperson, and a number of association members. I can assure you it's going to be exciting and insightful show and my first ever live episode. Now, my first guest joining me on stage is a courageous person. She's at the forefront of combating energy and carbon use in the kitchen. She's got an exceptional track record and consistency in smashing targets in terms of financial and sales performance. And she's also the newly appointed chairperson of the FEA.
Emma, welcome to the show. How are you?
I'm good.
Good. No pressure, because we're doing it in front of a huge audience.
Yeah, we just pretend they're not there.
So, yeah. Traditionally, as you may know on the show, the first question is asked from the last guest of the last episode. And earlier this week, I interviewed a two Michelin star chef, Raphael, who's got an incredible story. He came to the UK from Brazil with literally nothing and worked his way up to being one of the finest culinary minds in the UK, if not the world, to a two Michelin star. And his question to you was, what's the FEA going to be doing to sort of get young people into industry, into our industry, the food service equipment industry?
So we've got the apprentice scheme, which actually isn't that new. It's right. Something that has been going for a long time. So that's always been, a way to encourage young people. But probably because it's called the apprentice scheme, it feels like it's only for someone that's an apprentice. So actually, other young people, how do they get involved? And I think actually that's something, obviously the FEA can support that, but I think it's also something that the members of the FEA can support. So if you look around the room today, there'll be managing directors, sales directors, and those kind of senior people.
Yeah.
So it has to be incumbent on those businesses to allow their young people to join us.
To sort of help encourage.
Yeah, bring, you know, and again, this year we had this, the FEA offered a cheaper rate to come for the day for people in businesses that hadn't been before. So I don't know how, I mean, I actually bought two of my colleagues, Louis, who is new to Quintex, he's in his mid-20s, and Chris, who's our commercial director, who you know, he's in his mid-30s. So I feel like I've ticked the box on the young people. So, you know, go me. But no, I think it's, you know, and I think we're all about bringing young people in. You know, diversity and inclusion is a big thing. And obviously me sat here today kind of ticks that box as well. So there's always going to be more to do. And I think over the next 2 years, that's something that I can hopefully work with the board and the council and the other FEA members to bring in more young people.
Perfect. Well, thank you. A tough question there to start with maybe, but let's kind of kick us off into the main bit. Can you give us a bit of introduction about yourself, how you became into the food service industry, and then obviously your journey now to being the FEA chair?
Yes. So I'm a mum, a wife. I've got a son called Lucas, and I've got two miniature schnauzers, Ruby and Lola.
Okay.
And I joined Quintex in 2004 as office manager. And then we had two salespeople at the time, and they left. So I said to the MD, I could do that.
Right, okay.
It's just talking to people. It can't be that difficult. So anyway, became sales manager and successfully sold our systems into businesses like Wetherspoons, Mitchells and Butler. And then I actually left Quintex, had a 6-month sabbatical back in 2016 due to some ownership changes. I won't go into all of the detail about that, but So, and then it was actually the previous owner of the business bought the business back in 2017. And he actually asked me to come back as sales manager, which I did. And then we had an operations manager at the time. He left. And again, it was that whole scenario, like, who's going to run the business now? So I was like, I'll do it.
Right.
And I became general manager in 2019. And then COVID hit. Mm-hmm. So that was a bit of a shock to the system, having never managed a business before, and then trying to manage a business through COVID. And I mean, we essentially shut our business down for 3 months because the likes of Mitchells and Butler and Wetherspoons, they shut all their pubs. Yeah. So they cancelled all our work. And that was when we actually looked to sort of diversify, because we've always worked direct to client. All of our 95% of our business is direct to client.
Okay.
And that's how we've been successful. But at that point, we had to sort of say we need to look at other options. So that's when we joined the FEA, and it's been, you know, a huge support for our business.
Quite recently, really.
In 2020. And then I got asked to sit on council quite early on. And then, yeah, Paul chose me as his vice, and here we are now. Wow. I'm the chair.
Yeah, so quite a fast-track approach there. That's great.
Yeah.
Congratulations on becoming the new chair, obviously.
Thanks.
I'm sure it feels quite, there's a lot going on.
Yeah.
what have you got planned for your tenure during the time?
Again, like I said, the FEA has been a huge platform for me and for my business. So I hope that, again, over the next 2 years, working with the members to show them, you know, how the FEA can support your business and help your business grow. Obviously, I've got Lawrence as my vice. He's been the head of the Revenue and Marketing Committee for a number of years, and they've run the conference. You can see how well they've been run, which is part of the reason for choosing Lawrence. But he's not going to be doing that anymore, so he's going to hand over to Kelly,
right.
Who's going to be looking after Revenue and Marketing Committee. And recently, again, we've set up the sort of light equipment, and Paula's a lot more involved in that, which is brilliant. And then we've got Vita looking after the members.
Yeah.
So I'm naming the girls in the group here.
Yeah.
You know,
I'm talking to those two later.
Yeah. Even. Yeah. Yeah. That's fantastic that there's now. And yesterday, Tracy from Hobart was voted into council as well. So we've now got five women in the council. So yeah, I think trying to encourage more women into the council as well, and to get more, and just encourage members to get more involved.
Okay.
Because you really only get out what you put into something.
Of course. Yeah.
You know, we can all sit here and say, oh, well, we're not really getting very much for our membership, but what are you actually
putting in?
Yeah.
Okay.
Because I feel like I've put in a lot, and
yeah,
I'm a testament to how much effort you put into something.
Well, that leads us on to the next question, really, the elephant in the room, which is your first female chair. What's that feel like in obviously quite a male-dominated sector?
Do you know what? It's freaking awesome, isn't it? No, it is. It is an achievement, for right. sure. But, you know, I think, I mean, the studies have shown that having a more sort of diverse board in business, businesses are 27% more successful when they've got a more balanced and diverse board. I feel like I'm the right person for the job. It's not just because I'm female.
Okay, yeah.
I mean, maybe there's a little bit of that because the FEA has this old boys club.
Not anymore.
Well, no, not anymore. And when I joined in 2000, I remember sitting, looking at a screen with you know, the 16 faces of the council, and I was the only female at that point. And you know, the guys, we all joke about it. Glenn always used to say, oh, we're stale, pale and male. But I think we have to also appreciate the men in the room as well.
Of course, yeah.
Because I think without them, you know, we wouldn't actually have this sort of association. I think it's important not to alienate them and be like girl power and all of that sort of stuff. And, you know, I'm not a feminist by any stretch. I enjoy the banter of in the room and all of that. So I think, yeah.
It's a good achievement anyway. So,
yeah, I think so.
A slightly different question now. It's something that one of the listeners emailed me to ask you. Mm. if there was one gadget in the industry that you think we should all kind of own, what might that be?
I mean, it's got to be a demand control ventilation system.
Oh, isn't it? No, you set me up there.
Yeah, I did. No, in fact, funnily enough, I asked my son this because he's a chef. Because I deal with above the canopy and above the kitchen in ventilation. I don't really do a lot below it. So he said a really good knife sharpener.
True, yeah. That's a good answer. So, I mean, sustainability, obviously, it's really important to you, and I know it's that you really work hard on. Can you tell us a little bit more about Quintex and why sustainability is important to you personally?
Yeah, I mean, I think I don't want to get too heavy on the whole sustainability thing, but only in the last couple of months we've seen the devastating floods in Spain, the hurricanes in Florida. You know, they're the worst hurricanes that they've seen in 100 years. And, you know, that kind of thing is going to become more apparent.
Yeah.
We can all, you know, put our head in the sand and pretend it's not really going to happen, but it's going to happen. You know, the world's getting warmer and we need to do something about it. But I don't, again, I don't want to, like, you know, bring everyone down, doom and gloom and all of that sort of thing. So, I mean, our products, our main product, Cheetah, is an energy control system. And we've been selling that for 20 years. So, again, I feel like we're leading in that field of sustainability. We've also got EcoFix, which is an automatic duct cleaning system. So we spray a biological fluid into the ductwork and it eats the grease. So it's like a little bug that you find in yogurt and stuff like that, a bacillus bug. So that reduces the need for manual cleaning. It uses sustainable products, and that's the sort of general ethos of our company. We also import a heat recovery system from Sweden, which takes the heat from, again, the ventilation. So we're all about the ventilation. It takes the heat from the ventilation, and you can use that to preheat the air coming into the building or water or something like that as well.
Right, okay. So just thinking, if we went back to an 18-year-old Emma. I don't know what you're like then, but what would she say about your career now? And obviously now that you're the chair of the FEA, what do you think?
She'd be like, you've got really old, haven't you? Yeah, I mean, I was thinking the other day, when I was 18, I thought, I'm never going to get old. And now I'm sitting here and I'm 51, but there we go. You can't really control that, can you? You can't stop it. I think 18-year-old Emma would be surprised, to be honest with you. I think I didn't enjoy school. I dropped out of college after a year. I got a job, a rubbish job, really. And it's taken me a long time to get here. You know, I've worked for Quintex for 20 years and I only became the MD 4 years ago. So, but, you know, I've worked hard. I've obviously put my head above the parapet to get noticed. And
hopefully she'll be proud.
I think she would be, yeah. I think she probably would be.
So kind of brings on to the final question, really. That time's gone quite quick for us, really. But you're hosting a dinner party. It's something I asked all the guests on the show. You're hosting a dinner party for three or four people. They can be dead or alive. They can be famous or not famous. Who would you invite and what would you cook? Or would you buy it in or take them to a restaurant?
Are they dead at dinner?
Well, whatever you want.
No, I love Ant and Dec.
Okay.
Obviously, I'm a celebrity.
Are they one or two?
I'm a celebrity's back on the screen and I watch it, but I don't watch it for the contestants in the jungle. I watch it because I think Ant and Dec are hilarious. And I thought it would be nice to sit down for dinner with Princess Diana.
Oh, yeah.
So
okay.
Ant and Dec and Princess Diana. And again, I'd probably get my son to cook. I wouldn't cook, but I'd get him to do us a beef Wellington or something like that. He's quite good at that. And then probably a sticky toffee pudding for dessert.
So I'm going to ask you one more final thing, because he's actually in the audience here. So my next guest on the next show is Nick Williams from Precision.
Okay.
Is there anything, what would you like to ask him, man? Obviously, Nick, you're getting insight. It's not fair. So, yeah.
Where is Nick?
He's just there.
Oh, hello. Okay, I would say when I was younger, people used to say to me that I looked like Julia Roberts.
Okay.
And I wonder if Nick's ever been asked if he looks like anybody or told he looks like anybody famous.
Don't answer it now, Nick. Just hold that for a couple of weeks' time. Well, that concludes this episode. We're running on time, which is good. Thank you so much for giving us some insight into your career, time at the FEA, and obviously now we know you don't like cooking. So, yeah, thank you.
No worries. Thank you.
Thank you.
Service Equipment Association, FEA, is the food service and hospitality equipment industry's largest trade organisation. We represent our members with a powerful voice on a national and global level. Our members benefit from information, involvement and influence at the very highest of levels and are incorporated in all that we do. The membership remit encompasses a full spectrum of food service equipment manufacturers and importers, distributors of light and heavy equipment and service providers. If you would like to join the FEA or find out more, please visit our website at fea.org.uk.
So my next guest is an exceptionally respected individual and a highly influential leader in the food service equipment market. He is the existing chair of the FEA. With an outstanding career working for some of the best brands in our sector, including Rationale, Graham, Hosozaki, and for the last 8 years, he's been the managing director of Myco UK. It's an absolute pleasure to welcome Paul Anderson to the show. Paul, how are you?
I'm very well, thank you, Radford, thank you.
How are you enjoying the conference so far?
I'm loving it. It's vibrant, it's bubbly. What more could you want?
Exactly. Well, I appreciate you giving me my time because I know you like it's an exceptional busy day for you and Emma as you're transitioning over the power, if you like. Can you just start to give us a little bit about yourself, your kind of career in our sector? Yeah, and what brought you as well to being the chair of the FEA?
Wow, great question. Well, I would say you've got to go back over 30 years.
Right.
In this sector, probably early 90s, fine food distribution. And I just loved food.
Right, okay.
I was covering East Anglia with a small firm based out of Burwell in Cambridgeshire. And then I took to it like a duck to water. And then I had a team of seven people. And it was really, really good. And then unfortunately, the company decided to grow really, really quick. And it was too quick. And I could see the writing on the wall. So I thought, all right, it's time to look.
Okay.
And I saw this advert for Lockhart catering equipment. And I thought, well, I love the food. What about the equipment? I could see myself doing that. And that was it. I just had a big passion for it and it was very successful. And I was in the Harlow office and it was great times. Everybody was thrown all the training in those days.
And that was when Lockhart was, it was massive, wasn't it? It was the leader.
It was huge, you know, and everything was just bouncy and it was good fun. And funny enough, during that time, we promoted a product called by Myco. We did the Myco range.
Right, okay.
And one thing led to another, and I got approached by Myco.
Mm-hmm.
And that led to an approachment by Graham.
Right.
And then I guess the career change was really, and these are positions moving up, so which was good timing. And then I got approached by Rationale, and I would say that
and that's
was,
kind of where we know each other.
Yeah, we do go back, and we do know each other.
Yeah, we do know
we've
each
had
other.
Many a time, and much,
maybe not for this podcast.
Much good fun. No, we'd have to filter a lot of that, I think. But we've known each other good 20 years, and of course your sister as well.
Of course,
And we've had many good memories. But I would say that was probably the turning point in terms of very fast progression because I had a great team. And you know, you remember it when we launched the new product. Mm. It flew.
Yeah.
And it just absolutely flew. And I think I remember when I joined, it was 16 million. And within 3 years, it was 34 million.
Wow.
So it was really, really quick growth. Yeah. And it was great fun. And I've never left a company with a closed door.
Mm.
It's always been very good. And then I got reapproached again by, would you believe it, Graham.
Okay.
And that was for a commercial role, more European role, a senior role, which was very good. And then out of the blue, approached by Myco.
Yeah.
Like a really quick, are you interested? And within a matter of days, flown to Germany.
And that was 8 years ago. I mean, it just feels...
About seven and a half years ago.
Okay. Oh, I say 8 years
but
ago.
It's, right. But it's funny. So I've sort of worked for two companies twice and I've ended up back where I was 20 years ago.
Yeah,
and if I'd have stayed where I was 20 years ago, I would have had five less pensions and I probably would have known the product range even better.
Absolutely.
But I wouldn't have got where I was if I didn't have that movement and progression. So it's been a good learning curve.
Of course.
And now I'm back where I guess I always have blue blood.
Yeah. I mean, so you're managing director of Myco UK. I mean, it's a highly respected brand. Let's not beat around the bush. What does it look like day to day, your work? What is being MD of that brand about?
Well, what a great question. It's a really recognized worldwide brand. I mean, to lead it is an absolute honor. If I'm honest with you, I mean, my role is basically the captain of the ship. So I choose the destination.
Right.
We're going to have some bumpy rides. Mm-hmm. Let's hope we get to that beautiful island and it's a sunny day and crystal clear waters lovely, beautiful beach with cocktails. And we will get there. And we seem to have done that over the years. I mean, I've made some changes to the team that was necessary. We've really grown dramatically. Of course, like everybody else in our sector, we had a couple of years of a blip with COVID.
Of course, yeah.
But no one planned that. And we've bounced back much, much stronger. And it's in a really good, healthy place. And it's a pleasure. I'm in the office at least maybe 2 to 3 days a week.
Okay.
I don't think anybody could run an office being based in office all the time. So I'm out and about with people, meeting people. Yeah. Clearly, the FEA role is still quite important. And other things that I do with Germany. So it's a pleasure to lead. Yeah.
Okay. Quite a busy role, I imagine. So you're passing on the baton of the FEA chair, if you like. Was it 2 years tenure or three?
It's 2 years tenure.
To Emma, who was your vice. So you picked Emma Brooks as your vice. What made you do that?
Well, do you know what? I have to pick someone.
Yeah.
And when you get asked to be vice chair, you know that's going to lead to chair. So ultimately, at some point, you know you've got to pick
somebody.
A vice chair.
Yeah.
And you sort of look around the table, the council, and you think, well, who could be the next chair?
Yeah.
And it's really difficult.
Yeah, I mean,
it's really, really difficult.
It's all good.
Because you know maybe the two or three of them that want to have a go. But it's ultimately, it's your choice.
Mm.
And it wasn't done from anything from a male perspective or a female perspective. It had to be the right person.
Yeah.
And Emma was just, in the year and a half, 2 years she'd been on the council, she's very involved. She's very passionate.
Mm-hmm.
She's got a wonderful way about her in terms of manner and characteristics. And she just had this, she's just got this sort of wonderful bloom, sort of blossom sort of feeling, and it sort of comes across very warming.
Yeah.
And I just saw, do you know what? I think you could be perfect.
Yeah, I think. And she's had a good reception.
And I look at, and I sat back last night, and it's quite nice to sit back after 2 years of whirlwind.
Yeah.
To watch someone else take that role with vigor. And I was beaming. I was smiling.
Definitely. So, I mean, looking back at what would you say your highlights are of the role as chair of FEA?
God, I don't know whether I could pick one. There's been quite a few. I mean, there's no book on it. So you literally, I mean, I said to myself, and I said to my wife, and I had all the backing of Myco worldwide and completely to do whatever I wanted. I said, I'm going to do this. I'm going to do it 110%.
Okay.
I'm only going to do it if I can do it right. So you get invited left, right, and center to so many events, and they've all been wonderful.
Right.
I guess the biggest thing that I was really proud with was I really wanted to try and create sort of a feel of younger audience attending,
yeah,
a little bit more diversity. And now I look around the council and I see that.
Mm.
There's more women joining. Again, there's more women again with Tracy from Hobart coming on board, as Emma mentioned yesterday. There's definitely a feel of a change in the audience.
Definitely
there
younger used to be audience. 3 years ago. Just had that, the apprentice guy.
You and I would know if we'd gone back 10, 15 years, it was, male, pale and stale.
Emma
had said, not saying we are,
I'm sure. No, let's not put us in that category.
We've known each other far too long to bring that up. But honestly, I think it's gone the right way. So I'm pleased with my tenure, but there's nothing, there's not really one thing I could say that would pick out.
That sounds out, yeah.
One thing that was very good that I'm delighted with, obviously it was a big move to know that Keith was going to retire.
Mm.
And then we appointed and interviewed people and John was successful. So we've had the sort of transition from Keith to John. Mm. Now, I'm not like talking like Doctor Who when he changes into a different person and all of a sudden they're there. But that's a big move.
Yeah,
that's a big role
for this organization.
And that was a lot of my time to try and make sure that it was a smooth path to bring John in. One thing that's different from a number of years ago is we have Andy Threlfall from a technical role. So you didn't have to absorb all of that. He's got that in Andy. But I guess that was a key point, but there's been many.
Well, it's a big, big change, isn't it? Having John take over from Keith, it's such a big name. So, I mean, a bit of an odd random question, if you like. If the FEA chairperson was equipped with a superpower, what would that superpower be, do you think? And is there anything you would change the industry just with it?
Wow. Look, I'm a Star Wars boy. It was my first film that I ever saw, but I can't even think of anything like that. Honestly, if I had a superpower, I think with our industry, the more people know about home economics and cooking and food, the better we would be. I mean, you and I probably know when we were kids, it was part of our youth.
Yeah, we did home economics.
And I think we need to re-go back to that. So you encourage people from a much younger age. So if I had a superpower, it would be to empower and influence people from a much younger age about the beauty of food and cooking. So maybe at some point as they grow up through their teens, there's a passion to reconsider this wonderful industry.
Yeah, okay. So let's just touch a little bit about Myco, if that's all right. You know, obviously most people know who Myco are, but maybe just give us a bit of a synopsis about Myco, the business, what you're doing differently in the market, why you're different.
Well, I'm glad you said it. One of the most confusing things that people say is they never say the name right.
Is it Myco or Myco?
It's Myco.
Oh, it's Myco. Okay, well, I got it right.
It was founded in 1927 by Myers and Conrad.
Right.
So, of course, what's coming up is 100 years when it gets to 2027. Oh, wow, okay. So there will be big celebrations.
Yeah.
So Myco is a wonderful company to work for. It's a foundation status. So we're not owned by any shareholders, stockholders. We don't have investors. Wow. All the money goes back into the company for the stability of the employees. So it feels like a family. Wow, okay. And it spreads down. And over the last few years, it's got even more so. Very collaborative, very open. And Myco is really good fun. I mean, we have four key areas. We have Myco Clean, which is warewashing. Myco Green, which is food waste. Myco Care, which is bedpan washing.
Okay.
Which you sort of have to treat that differently and separate, obviously, from food. And then Myco Protect, which is for self-contained breathing apparatus for the fire brigades. Masks and cylinders.
Okay, that's all within that. Well, I didn't even know
all
that.
Within my umbrella. So, you know, every day is different.
Yeah.
And very good.
Okay. And if we talk about like the food service aspect of it, what makes Myco different in the products, would you say? And, you know, why should people pick that, I suppose?
Well, I guess there's many options in the marketplace. I mean, we all don't drive the same car. It gets us from A to B. But, you know, Myco is a very top-end product. It's German built. It uses high-end components within. I mean, the machine itself, irrespective of size or range, is built exquisitely. Very high standard, very long life.
Yeah.
But like anything else, it's only as good as the service that you provide and the backup and the support. And Myco as a company is extremely good at that, as offering a turnkey solution. Okay. So what we offer as a package really does give the customer some quite unique benefits, maybe over and above some others.
Well,
that seems to be the case from feedback we're receiving.
Yeah.
And hence, that's part of the reason for the fast growth.
So in terms of maintenance, once it's installed, keeping it operational, servicing, all of that kind of things that we're talking about there.
Yeah, we want to offer a wraparound service so we can look after it and service every year and cover it for extended warranty or things like no bills, but we're changing.
Because I imagine it's water. It's quite like our water's corrosive. So, isn't it? So like, I don't know. I guess it's challenging.
Well, it's challenging because the water in the UK is changing so often that it's actually getting harder.
Yeah.
You have to work on parts per million in what's called the Clark reading in terms of scale. And maybe years ago in London, it wasn't so bad, but now it's really, really hard.
Right. Okay.
So, you know, softeners are required to protect certain systems, but we test all of that and we work really closely with our customers to do it. But if you cover it with a good maintenance, and we're very fast response, and we're very, very high on first-time fix, customer gets good support.
Yeah, and they're satisfied, I suppose. So, yeah, okay, thank you for that. So just getting back to the FEA, why do you think it's important that companies join the association? And you know, why is the association important, really?
I think the association is the backbone for support and knowledge and guidance for, you know, every type of business within our sector in the UK. There's a lot of laws, there's a lot of governance. A lot of people don't know where to go to get that information.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you've listened so far in the conference, you've got things about environmental emissions, you've got TM65, different legislations here. It could be RAS, could be Kiwa, it could be NSF Reg 4 for water.
Yeah.
But where do you go for that?
Yeah.
Where do you go for gas? Where do you go for the fog regulations? I mean, you listen to Andy Threlfall. I mean, he's just a mind full of information.
Okay.
And you think, where do you go? Well, collectively as an organization, we have that.
Yeah.
We're a support. Okay. So we work closely with FSEM in Europe. So we want to embrace some of the regulations.
Are they like another association in?
European Federation of Catering Equipment Manufacturers.
Okay, right.
Got that right. Very good. Obviously, with Ian Munro being the Secretary General.
Okay, yes.
So there's a good relationship between what's applicable in Europe and with UK.
Yeah, some collaboration things.
Absolutely. So I think from a manufacturer point of view, it's really important to understand what's necessary within your market. mm-hmm. in terms of legislations and guidance. And we're the largest trade association in this sector. So we offer that as support.
Yeah. I mean, my experience is it seems quite nurturing and supportive.
Oh, that's kind.
I think, I mean, even just for this podcast and things, it's been very
supportive. Well, thank you.
Supportive.
That's the aim. We want to be approachable. We don't want to be seen like an old boys network or just pay a fee because I want the names on the bottom of my tender.
Yeah.
We don't want that. You know, the whole idea is that we're here for support. Pick up the phone. We can help you. You know, that's what we want. Not just to be, well, I'm a member of the FEA, you know. Yeah.
It's more than that. Huh?
And yeah, it's much more than that. Yeah.
Okay. So just, we're here at the conference. What, I mean, I know we're, I think, 3/4 of the way through the day. What's been your highlights today? I know you touched on it just a minute ago.
Do you know, there's a number of things. They're all important. They're all applicable. I think the AI was quite, the last one was the one that's probably a little bit more fresh in my mind, mm-hmm. because I find that fascinating.
Yeah.
I find AI a little bit daunting.
It's amazing.
And I find it a little bit incredible all in the same breath, you know. And I've used things like ChatGPT, and I, like, ex-musician for 28 years. I mean, I asked it to write a song. And it's absolutely amazing. I mean, it's incredible and so quick.
Yeah.
And you think that's uncanny. It's almost like someone at the end of the computer is actually doing it. So I think we're entering a weird and wonderful world of how much control will we actually have in the future and how much will be controlled by others.
Yeah.
I was watching Elon Musk's program the other day when he had these robo cars and robots.
Yeah.
So they were getting into taxis. There was no steering wheel, no scary driver, and it was taking them to places. And I think, is that the future?
Wow.
I don't know.
Yeah. And it's moving at quite a pace, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Well, kind of like the last question, it's that I ask all my guests. You're hosting a dinner party. I mean, you can cook or not cook. You can buy it in if you want. I don't care. It's up to you. Who would you invite to the dinner party? Like three or four people, dead or alive. And what would you cook if you were cooking, or what would you buy in or whatever?
Wow.
It's a big question.
It's a tough one, isn't it?
It is.
It's a tough one. Well, you know, I'm going to have to think about it. Okay, let's reverse it first. Cooking wise, I'd probably have a go myself.
Do you cook?
I do cook.
Okay, right.
I do cook. Yeah, I mean, I'd be a bit worried if I'm serving some of the people I'm going to name in a minute. But I think, yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Look, I was always a fan of some of the older things. I mean, yeah. I can imagine. Morecambe and Wise would be just completely off the wall stupid.
Yeah, that'd be fun.
Would be hilarious.
Yeah.
I quite like Stephen Fry for his unprofound knowledge and ability to adapt in any situation.
Yeah.
And I quite like that. So they're a definite three.
Okay.
That's for sure.
Yeah, yeah. That'd be an interesting mix between those. Morecambe and Wise.
Be hilarious mix. Yeah, yeah. And if you really then wanted to funk it up, I'd have Pete and Dud from the old school, you know. So, yeah, Dudley Moore would be hilarious too, but yeah.
Yeah.
And that's, I mean, they'd be laughing at what I cook, no matter what I did, so yeah.
What do you think you might cook? Have you got any idea?
I have no idea. Well, okay. Actually, that my passion is I love, I'm very, like the Deep South outdoor cooking. So I do a lot of, when the weather gets better.
Okay.
A lot of barbecuing, a lot of long hours smoking, 7 to 9 hours on ribs and briskets.
Oh, wow, okay.
Like, I love all of that.
That'd be nice.
I love all of that.
With some nice wine and
so they'd have to come around outdoors in the summer. That's when they'd have to come around.
Yeah, yeah. Well, yeah, we could do it in the snow, but it wouldn't be so fun.
It wouldn't be the same.
It wouldn't be the same, no, at all. Well, Paul, thank you so much for your time, breaking away for the conference. It's been great to talk to you and getting insight into your career. I've learned some things.
That's good. So have I.
I hope you've enjoyed it.
I have. Thank you.
Well, thank you very much, and enjoy the rest of your day.
My pleasure.
In this final section of the show, I'm going to be joined by four FEA members who are going to talk to me briefly individually. Now, my first guest is Vita Whittaker, and she's the owner and commercial director of Whitco. Now, I believe you're relatively new to the FEA Council since 2023, and you're the new chair of the FEA's Membership Services Committee. Vita, welcome to the show. How are you?
I'm very well. Thank you very much, Radford.
Long time since I saw you.
A long time since I saw you too.
But you're looking absolutely fantastic as always.
Thank you very much.
Give us a little bit of intro about Whitco and yourself.
Well, Radford, it's hard when you get asked those questions, but I'll introduce myself first. So probably on the Whitco front, I've always been more the creative side of the business, so less of the kitchen side. I tended to be the operational and strategic manager in the office. Today, the best part of the job that I like is actually transforming customers' buildings and literally working from a zero idea to a handover, which then I can't explain the level of joy when, you know, customer tells us that we've exceeded their expectations. So the company was established almost 30 years ago by Jeff and myself. Mm-hmm. I think we were quite recognized as quite niche, quite entrepreneurial. Jeff was extremely knowledgeable about catering, being a chef at a young age, but selling for major manufacturers. He also built up a knowledge on bakery, and that's been some of the successes of our business, where we've not wholly depended on one sector. And I think his ethos of being creative, innovative, entrepreneurial, but ultimately customer service driven, has now sort of taught us his way. And we've adopted that since he passed away. Yeah. So we try and solve all our clients' problem. Well, we're solution driven, I suppose. Not very good at corporate language, Radford. I try and keep it very simple. But we try and lead with not only the brief, but actually what else can we do to solve that problem?
Add value in things.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think people talk about us now as a brand. So that's been a lot of my creation with the team. Mm-hmm. We employ 20 people, but over 12 of our team have been with us for between 12 and 25 years.
Wow, that's good.
So
that speaks for itself, really, doesn't it?
The company has shaped itself around those individuals. And one thing we absolutely share is that sort of customer service, easy to do business with. Our customer service speaks for itself. We always drive with quality products that are always affordable. Mm-hmm. And we never compromise. So they're the sort of things that Jeff built the business on. And we still have customers that we serve from 1995 when we were first established.
So why did you join the FEA? I mean, how long have you been a member? And then I know you're a new council member.
Well, we've been a CESA member for about 15 years.
Okay, so a long time as an organisation.
Yeah, definitely. And it goes back to also when I was on CEDA board. So I understand the value of associations. So it's really, for us, the worldwide knowledge that we get from being in FEA.
Yeah.
The fact that the influence that the FEA has mm-hmm. on a lot of the legislation.
On government that, things.
And other large organisations. But ultimately, the reason for being is that collaboration.
Yeah.
Collaboration is so important within any sector. It's manufacturer, supplier, distributor, designer.
Definitely, yeah. Try to learn together and then grow together. Yeah. And so, I mean, you're quite new chair of the Membership Services Committee. What is that?
Well, we're looking at member services. So why would you be a member of FEA? And I've sat there as the new girl on the block and listened to this year in discussions. And ultimately, it's a pleasure now to be asked about how I can bring some new ideas. And I suppose I'm looking at what is really missing. I mean, an example that's just come to mind is we just had a presentation on sustainability, and we always think about sustainability as part of a machine that's being manufactured or the kitchen that it sits in. But what about our members' sustainability? What about our own?
Yeah.
What about an association that could potentially be all limiting waste? That could be waste of time, money, efficiency. So I'm just slowly thinking, why would somebody want to join the membership of FEA? And what is the value to the business? So it'd be good to see how that grows, Bradford.
Yeah. And obviously you're going to be integral to it. And I think now, I think Emma was saying on stage there, that is there five or six females now on the...
Yeah, Yeah, I remember Steve. I remember in the past Steve Coates saying we need some more women on the CESA council. I think he's probably quite pleased now to learn there's a few more.
What value does the FEA bring to, you know, for companies join it? What's the value? And I guess you've touched on that already. And then also about why are you here at the conference, and what value does that bring for yourself and other people?
Well, if I go back to things like knowledge share, collaboration, as well as providing opportunities to learn new skills, hopefully expand on more qualifications that are recognised outside of our industry so that they're parallel with other industries.
Yeah.
Years back when I did my master's, it was a master's that was developed around hospitality.
Yeah.
It was the first time that our industry had developed anything like that.
Yeah.
So to look at parallel qualifications so that we can be sitting in environments where we are shoulder to shoulder with other recognized skills is the way forward.
Definitely.
Making
the industry more professional, I suppose.
Be seen. We are extremely professional, but there are people outside of hospitality who do not understand hospitality. They don't even understand the word. So it's just, it's about kitchens. Oh, it's about restaurants. And that's it. But there's an awful lot that goes into it. So we can see about how we can upskill and give more opportunities to the younger as well as the more mature people.
Perfect. Okay, well, thank you for that. And just a sort of final point to touch on, is there anything up and coming at Wicco you would like to share, or any innovations? Or
Just keep looking at how things are changing. It's incredible that a year ago we started thinking about the kitchen of the future, coping with the skill shortage, energy costs.
Yeah.
What was that going to mean? In my little geeky way, I started writing notes. The innovation days that we hold have been amazing learning opportunities for my team, with the manufacturers all presenting ideas to us.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes we've gone into those meetings thinking of one outcome, but we've actually come out with, some tremendous ideas.
Yeah.
The innovation, the customer experience center that we have, has changed also the way we are as a company. So previously, we were a company that was a supplier.
Mm-hmm.
Now we're living in an environment that resonates with our clients. Yeah. And the way we behave is very different. Previously, our sales force would bring in business to quote or queries to handle. And there would be no visual contact from the office staff generally with the client unless they were by appointment.
Yeah.
So actually now, behaving like our clients, where somebody could turn up at any given time without being prior announced,
mm-hmm.
means we have to look efficient, we have to look smiley, we have to have the door open, we have to be clean and tidy. So there's things that I'm showing my team that are so similar to the clients that we're actually serving.
Yeah.
And those are really quite interesting developments. So there's how do we serve our clients better by virtue of being in an environment that is similar to theirs.
Yeah, welcoming.
We are now a hub sitting within a fully operational showroom, which is everything from a kitchen to a bar to a restaurant.
Yeah, I saw it. It looks absolutely fantastic. And if you've not seen it, you definitely need to go on Wicco's website and have a look at it, because it looks amazing.
Well, I'd rather people just come to the door, actually.
Yeah, you said to me that people just turn up.
Yeah.
Which keeps you on your toes, I suppose, keeps your business on the toes. But
it's brilliant.
Something very different.
It's brilliant.
Not many people in the market doing it. I don't know if anybody else is doing it, to be honest.
No, they're not. So
very unique.
Yeah, our experience centre is us. It's cut to our cloth.
Yeah, fantastic.
Thank you.
Well, Vita, it's been lovely to see you again. Hopefully we won't leave it 20 years next time, however long it was. I think that's what it was, back to the rash nowadays,
years.
Wasn't it?
Oh, my God.
Thank you for giving the listeners some insight. I know it was short, but it's just a short snippet. And I hope you enjoy the rest of your day.
Thank you for the opportunity, Matt.
Thank you. Thanks. So next up is Greg Archer. He's the Managing Director of ContiQuip
commercial catering engineers and a long-time member of the FEA. Greg, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
How are you enjoying the conference so far?
Very interesting. Great. Very interesting. Very insightful.
Okay, fantastic. So tell us a little bit about how your career led to the position you're currently in, and tell us a bit about your business as well.
Okay, no problem. Yeah, my career started straight from school.
Okay.
Straight into the father's business, into Archer Catering. That was a bit of a shock because I remember at the time, I think my first day I had to get up at 5 o'clock in the morning, and it was like realizing that there was 2 5 o'clocks in the day, and off we went with my dad for a job down south. And so, yeah, that was a bit of a culture shock. Took some time away then, went, said, I can't do this. I'm going to go and enjoy being 16 with my friends and took a step back, and then started again in the September. On an apprenticeship, as it was then, it was a 5-year apprenticeship on a gas course, learning how to be an installation engineer.
Right, okay.
So it was different back then. It was challenging. It was in the '90s, the early '90s. So the restaurant boom and eating out was starting.
Yeah.
So it was quite a diverse installations that we were doing in British Home Stores, Burger Kings and motorway services and things like that. So that started to get me involved. So
you're actually an engineer by trade.
Yes.
So
yes.
You're really,
yeah. Started out and wow. Someone says, oh, working for your dad's business is always easy. And I can tell you it's probably
not
absolute, definitely yeah. One of the hardest things. It was certainly learned a few home truths and yeah. Things like that. So it put us in good stead. Like I say, my dad was a stickler for how we installed things and how we did things and how we were just different from everyone else. And it stood us in good stead to be able to build on the businesses. So, yeah, it was me and along with Nick. We did that. And then I kind of took an interest in the design side of it and wanted to kind of get away from what we were doing.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, you know, I'm done. You know, I was fed up with these 4 o'clock starts and getting into kitchens that were, you were trying to put kitchens, you know, can you install it? And it's like, well, your floor's not installed and your ceiling's not installed, but you ought to still install the kitchen.
Yeah.
And I said, I'm done with this. So I applied for a job with Lockhart Catering, as it was back then, and got that.
So you left the family business.
So I left the family business.
Wow, that was controversial at the time.
Yeah, it was a little bit like my dad was like, you know, well done getting out of there. And Nick was like, you're leaving me. And it was like, so yeah, I'm leaving. So I did a couple of years at that point. Lockharts were quite big then,
yeah.
Back in the mid 90s. So we worked out the Salford office. So again, you know, still keeping in touch with my dad, still never leaving that kind of the industry. Did my 2 years, two and a half, 3 years at Lockharts. And again, then kind of got itchy feet and wanted mm-hmm. to be like, well, 9 to 5 didn't quite suit me as I thought it was going to be. So it was like, right, I want to go back out again then. The opportunities at Lockharts weren't available back then. So it was like, okay, right. And I ended up going to a company called PwC Limited, which was Pakenham Walls Consultancies in Cheshire, in Crannage.
Okay. Right.
That again was working on the project management side and opened my eyes to that side of the business that I'd never been involved in.
Mm-hmm.
So all of a sudden you kind of, it was a design house. You had the designers there and they were then passing the jobs on to you. So it was an experience. We were looking after the IKEAs and again, British Home Stores, John Lewis, and a couple of motorway service stations. So it was exciting. It was good times. But again, itchy feet and an opportunity took me back to Lockharts as a salesman or a catering design consultant. Everyone loves anomalies, and it was three words. It was like, you're a CDC or you're a BDM, and you uh-huh. So I ended up going up back there as a kind of all in one. It was a design. It was, you had to look after your own job. So the history of what I'd done beforehand all of a sudden came to fruition. I could design kitchens, I could install them, I could project manage them. So it was this all in one role
with it
Lockharts. While there, Bunzel bought them and become a little bit of a bigger beast. And Archers at the time had grown. So it was a conversation we were having one night with Nick and my dad. And I turned around and said, right, let's go back to there then. So I think 2002, I handed my notice in at Lockharts. Probably not truthfully, probably something that you kind of think, well, I didn't really want to hand my notice in, but it was a family business. So it was like, right, let's come back to the fold.
Yeah.
So we went full circle and then come back to the business and kind of looked after the office side of it rather than going out and getting hands dirty. Did that. So I did a little bit of everything, to be honest, in there. And then around about 2008, 2009, we were starting to notice a shift of where we were replacing a lot of equipment,
mm-hmm.
we were being asked to fix a lot of equipment.
Yeah.
And years ago, my dad, you know,
crisis came.
Absolutely. Just at the start of the recession, it was like, you know, you would, where they just say, oh, it needs that part, we'll get a new one. It was like, oh, can you get us that part now? So it kind of thinking, right, well, how do we do this? So we had this company that we were going to take on the world with this company called Contiquip. We were going to bring in equipment from the continent and take it on. And obviously with the recession, it was like, well, let's use this company Contiquip for continuing equipment. And we'll have a service and maintenance company. So we started Contiquip and again, that started, we brought the engineers in and nature took its own course and Nick carried on looking after Archers on the install side and I carried on looking after Contiquip on the service maintenance and reactive side of it and it's grown to what it is today and we're a small company of 10 of us.
Yeah.
So we've got some good contracts, we've got some good reputation, good name out there. So that's where we are today and it's
okay.
Where I am.
Fantastic. Good story. So, I mean, you're a long-term member of the FEA. Why is it important to be part of this association and you know, what's it brought to you, really?
I think I kind of always said to someone, I said that the FEA and CEDA, it's always nice to be part of you feel part of a family.
Yeah.
You can be very isolated. It can be a very isolated world. Certainly being a catering engineer, you're kind of on your own or you're in the kitchens and I always say to my lads, I said, you can be within two jobs, you can be the world's best engineer to the world's worst engineer. If you can go in and that chef really needs his kitchen up and running and you fix it, you're great. You are the best engineer, but then your next job, you can't fix it. Well, you're absolutely rubbish. I've got a weekend of full bookings and I can't use my oven. You're terrible. And all of a sudden you can feel a bit isolated. And when you come to places like the FEA and CEDA, you feel part of a family. Everyone's got same issues and it's conversations that we had yesterday and it's conversations that you're certainly seeing today as well. Everyone's in the same boat. Everyone's in the same position. We're all working on the same goals. We're all trying to achieve net zero. We're all trying to be sustainable.
Yeah.
And there's certainly an element, and conversation was just having earlier, that it's hard for an engineer. We were talking about how an engineer can be sustainable.
Yeah.
But with the FEA and the support that we get from it and the legislation that the people are discussing, we might get there. We might get there as an engineer because it is a hard kind of thing for an engineer to be sustainable. But when you've got people at the FEA kind of fighting your corner, for want of a better word, and trying to make it sustainable and trying to speak to the correct relevant authorities and governing bodies, we might just get there. And that's where the FEA
obviously you can bring that insight as well from an engineering perspective.
Absolutely. Which
maybe sometimes not as forgotten, but that is, you know, in the bigger picture of everything that's going on is a part of it, but
absolutely it's the less glamorous. It's the less glamorous side of the business. You know, you look at some of the sites, it's like, oh, it's great, it's full of colour, it's full of this, and then all of a sudden it's like, yeah, but we work on it when it's full of grease, or we work on it when it's not been cleaned for a few years and things like that. It, yeah. Absolutely, you know, and it's you think it's bolted down, but it's actually stuck together with grease. It's like, well, okay, that's where we kind of work with it. So again, I'll go back and say, you know, don't worry, guys, the FEA, you know, we're here, we're working on this. They're trying to make it better for us. They're trying to push manufacturers. They're trying to lean on them to make sure that it's easier for us to work on, that it's a better world for us.
Yeah. So just a final question. Any reflections on the conference, what we've seen so far? I know we're only kind of like halfway through the day, but
it certainly brought a lot of questions.
Okay.
And the conversation we were having earlier about the sustainability of an engineer.
Yes.
You know, what do we do with the spare parts?
Where's the life cycle on that?
There's no life. And the kind of the engineer is the first part of that life cycle.
Yeah.
You know, he'll go to site and he'll replace something, and then the chance that it'll just get disposed of. Mm-hmm. And if it isn't disposed of, it'll just go to landfill.
Yeah.
Well, could that part have been, could elements of that part or elements of that motor been recycled?
Be stripped down could, and, yeah.
Absolutely. And I think that's where I'm probably going to, I was, you know, happy voted onto the council yesterday. And
oh, congratulations.
Thank yeah. you very much. Okay. Yeah. So I'm going to be kind of saying, well, okay, what,
well, now
what
you're
do
really
we do?
Be in on
absolutely.
It.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. What do we do as engineers? And, you know, I say, how can we turn around and say, how can we make this? Mm. You know, we've got fantastic, talented people out there that are creating all these wonderful things. Actually, we need to be a part of it as engineers, and we need to be in the fold, and we're the start of that when we're replacing equipment or when we're replacing it. Like I always say, the chances are the engineer is the first person that knows this piece of equipment is beyond its life cycle, it's beyond repair. Well, great, then what happens with it?
Yeah.
You know, and that's what we need to start, and that's where I want to try and hopefully help the FEA and push them to be like, say, come on, let's see if we can do something. Yeah. Whether that happens or not, I'm not sure.
Well, I'm sure it will. You sound very passionate about it, so that's
definitely
good. Well, Greg, thank you for taking some time out of the conference, giving up the lunch for me.
Indeed.
I hope you enjoyed it, and I hope you enjoy the rest of the show, the day. Yeah.
Thank you very much.
Cheers. Thank you.
Thanks.
So finally, we welcome Paula Sherlock to the show, Managing Director of Signature FSE, and relatively new chair, council member, elected in 2023. Is that correct?
That's right, yes. Thank
you. And also chair of the Light Equipment and Tableware Group. Paul, welcome to the show. Thank you for taking time out, cutting your lunch short for us. How are you?
I'm good, thank you. I had a really good morning so far at the conference. And yeah, thank you for the invitation to be here.
Great. So it's kind of, you enjoying it? Some insightful bits, I suppose?
Yeah, it's one of those days in the year where you really can take some time out to just think about the industry. And
yeah.
There might be only a few things that actually you put into practice, but it just gives you that headspace to think and just get away from the day job and give yourself some thinking time.
That's true. Yeah. Yeah. We don't really get much of that, do we really? So for our listeners, just give us a little insight into your role as managing director at your business and how you became MD of that role.
So my journey in the industry is a long one,
right.
But a really interesting one and a really enjoyable one.
Okay.
So started in the industry actually working for a food service consultant.
Okay, right.
And
okay.
So that was it wasn't my chosen industry when I left school. I'm not sure that many of us actually choose this industry. I think it chooses most of the time. So yeah, my first role in the industry was working, as I say, with a design consultancy company.
Okay.
So very quickly just got involved with the industry and, you know, introduction into a commercial kitchen, not an environment that I'd ever been in before. And then as sort of my career went on, I worked on various different sides of the industry and worked on heavy equipment with heavy equipment manufacturers.
Yeah.
Mostly on the marketing side, but that role involved being part of a quite a big sales team as well, and looking after the marketing for those quite big brands throughout my career. And then 20 years ago, started Signature.
Right.
And it was just a turning point as you get to in your life and your age and so forth, and wanted some new challenges and some different direction. And the opportunity came along,
mm-hmm.
a couple of different opportunities came along, and it seemed the right time to basically make that move away from being in sort of a much larger organization to starting your own business.
Mm-hmm.
And so, yeah, the company is now 20 years old. It's
wow.
It's changed and developed over the 20 years, as every business does. So we now look after 7 brands of products.
Okay.
So they're split between light equipment brands and tableware, and some more, not what we would classically call heavy equipment, but it's about presentation and cook in front of house.
Okay.
So the business is a real mix. So on the light equipment side, we work with, so 6 of the 7 brands that we work with are from European brands and European based companies. One is in the UK. So we work with Clifton, which is a sous vide product manufactured in the UK. So we are their agent. So we look after for them getting the product out through distribution and being their sales office, if you like, for their product. And we work in the same way for the other light equipment brands. So we work with Debuyer from France, or Debuyer, as it should be said, which is all of the back of house, cookware, utensils, pastryware. Yeah. Chasseur, which is cast iron products, so great for both cooking and serving. And Pinti from Italy, which is buffetware, tabletop buffetware plus cutlery.
Okay.
And then on the other side is the buffet and cooking side, which has really interested me for a long time, in terms of how we use theatre kind of cooking front of house.
Yeah.
And I've worked with a couple of different brands now for the last 10 years that are real experts in their field. So everything from modular buffet for your ambient, your hot and your cold holding, but also now for front of house cooking.
Okay.
So that guest experience, so bringing that product and the chef to the front of house and giving the guest that experience. And that in the last, I'd say it's been really popular, but in the last 2 years seems to really exploded since COVID.
Yeah.
Especially
people are looking for that more experience-led dining.
Yes.
In whatever field it is, be it restaurant or business industry or whatever.
Absolutely. And especially in contract catering.
Yeah.
So it's a real mix of products in our portfolio.
But everything but the sound thing across the range.
Absolutely, yeah. So all of the cooking equipment works on the front of house cooking equipment, and the presentation ware works with obviously the buffet. So there's a lot of synergies between the different brands.
Okay. So can you explain your involvement in the FEA and also the FEA's involvement in the light equipment and tableware community?
So as a business, we've been FEA members for 20 years.
Okay, so a long time.
So a long time.
Yeah.
So obviously been very involved with the FEA for a long period of time. And because of the light equipment brands that we have, obviously been part of the product group for the light equipment side, light mm-hmm. equipment and tableware group. So attended all of those meetings. And then I've taken over as chair of the group last year. So right, I was appointed onto council and now chair the light equipment and tableware group, which was looked after admirably by the predecessor who'd done that role for the last 18 years.
Right, okay.
So I was actually, really honoured when he sort of indicated that he would like me to be more involved in the group.
Mm-hmm.
And then obviously went for a council election when I was, fortunate enough to be elected onto council, which has allowed me then to take on that chair of the group.
Yeah.
So that's the journey.
And what kind of things are you doing within that community, that group?
So the group has been really active, and it started as the catering utensils group originally.
Okay. Right.
And then we've evolved it, it's evolved over the years. And it's been predominantly about the forum event that we'd hold once a year.
Okay, yeah.
So, which is a really successful event. It's really efficient for everybody because over a day and a half, all of the supplier companies where we tend to have between about 16 and 18, up to 20 supplier companies in the room. And then the distributor delegates are moving around and it's a training session. It's for us suppliers to train about our new products. So over a day and a half, you'll meet about 80 to 100 salespeople.
Wow, okay.
So
full on speed networking.
Full on, yes, speed dating for tableware. And so that's been a really successful event that's been on for a long period of time. And then coming, as I've done obviously as chair, my only observation was it's really great, it's a really successful event, but what are we doing the rest of the year? We can't be a one-hit wonder. We've got to do other things. So we're beginning to change and bring some new ideas to the fore. One of them is the newsletter that's now Tabletop Trends.
Okay.
That's now going out to the distributors on a quarterly basis.
Right. Okay.
So it's just keeping that engagement it's not just about the one event, it's about news throughout the whole of the year.
Yeah. Of course, and keep pushing and thinking. So the conference, what about the conference? Why do you think it's important for people to come to the conference and what do you gain from it, I suppose?
I think there's always a surprise. There's always something that you didn't know that you wanted to know about. Okay. And it's always a bit of a surprise.
Every
day's a school day. And that's really enjoyable. There's things that, you know, you read the schedule of the day, and there's certain topics that are going to really apply to you. And but it's just getting that overall perspective from the operator side as well. And, you know, there's always the sustainability topics and so forth, but that's a ever-changing topic. And what's this year's point about sustainability? Where are we? And this morning's session's been really great to listen to one of the delegates there on the stage and talking about packaging.
Yeah.
You know, and how relevant that is with our light equipment and tableware group, because a lot of those are in the packaging side and presentation of food.
Yeah, yeah, of course.
And that packaging side, is a big topic.
Well, Paula, thank you so much for giving us your time. I know it's a short interview. We want a short insight into your role and your role in the FEA. Hope you enjoyed it, and I hope you enjoy the rest of the conference.
I will. Thank you very much indeed, and look forward to hearing the podcast in the future.
Well, that concludes this episode of Kitchen Curiosity. I've got a great announcement to make that we've confirmed 24 episodes for 2025 with the help of Ali Group as our main sponsor. I'll be giving some more information about that in the coming weeks. And on our next episode, we're back in Waterloo in London for our final episode of Season 1, and it's going to be marking our Christmas special. We're joined by the managing director of a premium refrigeration company that's manufactured here in the UK, along with their UK sales manager, who, surprise, surprise, happens also to be my sister, Candy. We're ending the season with a rather special twist, Kitchen Confessions. Yes, that's Confessions with a K. And some notable chef guests that I've had through this season are going to be telling us some confessions. I'm also going to be talking to the MD of Precision and, of course, my sister. This episode is going to be coming out on the 20th of December. Thank you for all listeners for tuning in. Please make sure you send through any requests, any questions that you've got for future guests or anything you'd like me to cover next year. And you can email me on radford@kitchencuriosity.co.uk. Click subscribe to follow us, and if you've got the opportunity, please rate us on Apple Podcasts or Spotify, and don't miss out on the next episode coming up, the Christmas special. I've been your host, Radford Chancellor, and you've been listening to Kitchen Curiosity.